Two nights ago, on Friday night, we had a 13th birthday party in our household. It's fair to say Kate and I were a little bit nervous about how that would all go, and all these young girls were coming over. There's about 15 young girls were coming over to celebrate my daughter's, Maria's, 13th birthday party, and we didn't know many of these because a lot of them were new friends that she's made since starting high school, and we thought, how is all this going to go? And Maria particularly was very nervous that I was going to embarrass her in some way, shape or form. And it's, I can share quite gladly that it was a very fun night, that everyone enjoyed themselves, and I successfully managed, much to my daughter's relief, not to significantly embarrass her in front of all her friends. Just the very fact that my dad was sure a sign of some embarrassment, but I didn't do anything completely daggy or stupid, so that was really good. But one of the things, I know it is actually the role that I didn't live up to the role that I should have, but I was warned about it so many times that I thought, I've got to behave myself here. But one of the things that I noticed about 13-year-old girls is that it's impossible for them to go anywhere on their own. Now, even when it's time to go to the toilet, which in my own experience has always been a solitary activity, requires at least one other, if not more, to accompany them, if not inside the toilet, at least very closely to the door outside. What I discovered on Friday night is that 13-year-old girls just cannot stand to be separated from one another. Today we're continuing our series in Ephesians. We're in Ephesians chapter 6, verse 1 to 9, and we're coming across a very deeply important piece of biblical understanding that we really need to grasp. And that is that in Jesus there is no separation between what we might consider sacred and secular. There is no separation between what happens on a Sunday here at church and what happens on a Monday in our work and our family lives. Let's read Ephesians chapter 6, verse 1 to 9. Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Honor your father and mother, which is the first commandment with a promise, so that it may go well with you and that you may enjoy long life on the earth. Fathers, do not exasperate your children. Instead, bring them up in the training and in instruction of the Lord. Slaves, obey your earthly masters with respect and fear and with sincerity of heart, just as you would obey Christ. Obey them not only to win their favor when their eye is on you, but as slaves of Christ, doing the will of God from your heart. Serve wholeheartedly as if you were serving the Lord, not people, because you know that the Lord will reward each one for whatever good they do, whether they are slave or free. And masters, treat your slaves in the same way. Do not threaten them, since you know that he who is both their master and yours is in heaven, and there is no favoritism with him. Now, whether it be in our roles as children, or as parents, as employers, or as employees, whether it's in relation to those that we are responsible for or those we are responsible to, there is a spiritual aspect in all that we do. And this is what Paul is getting at in this passage. Not just here at church, but what happens every day, from Monday through to Saturday, and then Sunday again. But sometimes we compartmentalize our faith. Sometimes we say, well, our faith is really just what happens here at church on a Sunday, and in reality, it doesn't seem to make much difference the rest of the week throughout our lives. But what the Apostle Paul is trying to make clear here is that there is no separation. Whatever happens at church when you meet together is equally important as whatever happens throughout each day. Now, what I want to do today is tease out a number of practical implications that I believe we can take from a passage such as this that Paul says, particularly about family and work life, but we're coming down at a bit of a big picture approach rather than going very much into the details of family and work, but you'll get what I mean. There's five specific applications that I think we can take from this passage, and the first one is this, and that is where to bring dignity to others. we're to bring dignity to others. All throughout this passage, Paul is arguing that we have a mutual responsibility to treat each other with respect and dignity, regardless of our status or position. You see, it's not just parents and masters who have rights, but children and slaves as well. And you've got to understand that what Paul is writing here is revolutionary for his day, because children and slaves having rights was unheard of. But Paul says, no, no, no. All people need to be treated with dignity. In verse 4, Paul instructs fathers not to anger their children. See, children have rights. In verse 9, masters are told to treat slaves as they would like to be treated, with respect and fairness. See, slaves have rights too. Our church, over the last few months, has begun a relationship with the Second Chance crew in Bangkok, in the Klong Toei slum of Bangkok. And I love this work, and one of the reasons why I love it is because it's not a top-down solution. It's not us or Chris and Jodie McCartney, who are the workers in Klong Toei, coming up and above and looking down and saying, here you are, we've got a whole lot of things that we can help with you. We're going to solve your problems. Here we are to help. Here we are to be the Messiah, as it were. No, rather, Chris and Jodie have come in and they've come alongside, they've come underneath, they've come and become neighbours of the communities of Klong Toei. And as they've got to know their neighbours have come together, and in the midst of that relationship, they've come up with a solution together, the solution being an upcycle wares and op shop store that Second Chance is. But it started because Chris and Jodie, first and foremost, came to bring dignity to others. To come in alongside, to bring value, to speak value, to be in relationship and friendship, to partner. Second Chance is a response not by Chris and Jodie, it's a response by the neighbourhood of Ramgao in the Klong Toei slum of Bangkok, of which Chris and Jodie are a part of. They've come and they've brought dignity. You see, dignity is for all. It doesn't matter what your position is. It doesn't matter what your status is. It doesn't matter your wealth, your background, your race, your gender. It just doesn't matter, because we're all created equal in God's sight. And so therefore, all people deserve to be treated with dignity and respect. The second implication we can take from this passage is that we need to honour those in authority. We need to honour those in authority. Now, some have argued that this passage indicates that Paul approved of slavery, and I just want to go off on a little bit of a tangent here to comment on this particularly. What they say is that if Paul is instructing both masters and slaves in terms of how they relate to each other, then isn't it at very best some sort of implicit approval of slavery? Well, first of all, we've got to understand that slavery was a societal norm in Paul's day in a way that we don't easily or readily appreciate in our day today. See, Paul could not have imagined a society without slavery any more than we could imagine a society without electricity. And it's into this context, where slaves were often treated really poorly, that Paul actually commands his masters, the masters, to treat slaves well. In verse 9, he says, don't use threats, instead win them over with your care and your love that you demonstrate to them. I think an argument can be made here, quite rightly, that Paul's writing opens up the way for others that have come since that actually dealt with the issue of slavery. People like abolitionist William Wilberforce, who came with this understanding, the very thing that Paul's writing about in this passage, that everyone is created equal in God's sight, that everyone deserves to be treated with dignity and respect, and as a result, slavery is not honouring of God and is not the right thing, and therefore we need to deal with it. I think you could quite rightly argue that Paul was one of, if not the first, egalitarians in the ancient world. But let's come back to the honour of those in authority. Now, just about all of us are under authority in some way, shape or form. I know it's sad, but it's true. You know, whether it's a parent, whether it's a boss at work, maybe a coach of a sporting team, maybe you report to a board in your line of work, maybe it's just the authorities of the nation like the police force or other authorities like that, maybe it's in the mutual submission to your spouse, but pretty much all of us are under some sort of authority at some stage, or at all stages in fact. And when it comes to how we are to approach authority, the words that Paul uses in this passage are words like honor, respect, obedience, and sincerity. Now, although by and large, slavery is no longer the norm in our society, though it does exist both in our culture in Australia and in some other parts of the world, but not in the same way it did when Paul was writing these words. I think you can still extrapolate some of the principles that Paul applies here to the employee and employer relationship. Although it's a little bit different, I think some of the principles you can still apply. I can remember a time, a long time ago now, perhaps almost 20 years ago. It was my first paid ministry role. And I was there, and for the first 12 months in this paid role, I just was working with this boss who was my overseer at the time, and I just loved him, loved working for him, loved the room and the freedom that he gave me to experiment and explore new ways of ministry. It was wonderful. But then after 12 months, he resigned and moved on to another role outside the church, and he was replaced by another boss. And I had to get used to this new boss. And this new boss was much more in the details. Different personality, different character type. And so he was much more in my face, I guess, bringing correction where it needed to be brought. And it was a little bit less of that freedom and that space that I once had, and I really struggled with it. And for a season there, it's fair to say that I didn't exactly cover myself in glory, as I was a pretty cocky young punk and I thought I knew what I was doing. And I gave him a bit of a hard time. I made life difficult in Christian love, of course. But I remember after a period of 12 months or so of working with this boss and realizing that there was something not right in my heart attitude and being convicted about that. And so I made a decision that regardless of, I guess, what I thought of him or the process even of grief of the previous boss that was no longer there, that I wanted to honor and respect him. And I just made that decision and that I'd actually take on board what he was trying to say to me to see if I could become better as a youth pastor, which I was at the time. Now, this boss actually ended up helping me in a number of areas, and there's one particular area that I want to highlight. One of the things that he insisted that I did, and you've got to understand, in those days, I was a goer. I guess I still am somewhat, but I was a real goer. I didn't like to rest. I didn't like to be still. I just wanted to go and get things done. And this particular boss said, I want you, once a month, to take a day to pray. And he took me away and he instructed me on how to pray for a whole day, how to have a prayer retreat. Now, this is a practice that I still have in place to this day. And for the best part of the last 2 decades of being in ministry, I've practiced this on a regular occurrence. In fact, tomorrow I'll be taking a day to go away and pray. It's the second time I've done it for this year. I would say, without that teaching and instruction from that boss, I may not be in ministry today, because those prayer days are so nourishing and so affirming of God's call, and they bring life and energy and new vision. They bring restoration and renewal when they need to happen. It's so important that I take those days, and I think they've been a huge factor in, I guess, now almost 2 decades of ministry. We need to honour those in authority. We also need to operate with integrity. That's the third thing that I think we can take from this passage, to operate with integrity. Paul tells the slave in verse 6 to work just as hard when their master is not watching as when he is. Now, I used to work in construction, and I had a colleague there who was a Kiwi, and he told me a story about once when he was working on a job site in New Zealand, and it was a really huge job site, hundreds of construction workers working there, and one of his work colleagues decided, just to see how he would go, if he put a couple of bits of timber on his shoulders and just started walking around the job site, not actually doing any work, but just to see if anyone would notice and pick up on it. And so he started walking around, and And he started in the morning, and then it was the morning tea, which was called smoko. And so he put his timber down, joined the rest of the guys for smoko, and had a break. And then when smoko was finished, he picked the timber up and kept walking and stopped again at lunchtime. He did this for a day and a half, and no one said anything. Anyone work at workplaces like that? Probably not. He was bored out of his brain. He couldn't not work. He had to keep working. Now, I think when you're working, that there's nothing more frustrating than when you have to work alongside someone who's just not pulling their weight, who's not working as hard as they should, not doing what they said they would do, not following through in the way they said. Now, as I said, I used to work in construction, and the business that I worked for had about 30 employees. Roughly half were Christian and half worked. I worked for a great Christian boss. And a couple of the Christians there were very, very dedicated in sharing their faith, but not so dedicated in actually getting work done. And as a result, their witness to God's goodness and love for the world was horribly compromised. And the amount of conversations I had with non-Christian guys on that work site saying things like, if that's what it looks like, I don't want that. Because they don't have integrity. They're not practicing what they're preaching. You see, I think a good starting point to living out your faith in the world is to have integrity, to work hard and to do the right thing, regardless of whether your boss is there or not. We need to operate in integrity. We also need to make sure we're not antagonizing those that we are responsible for. We're to not antagonize those that we are responsible for. In verse 4, Paul instructs fathers not to make their children angry. And there's actually been quite a lot of speculation around what Paul was actually trying to say here. But I think my reading of it, it comes back to just treating those that you are responsible for justly, with fairness. There's this temptation as a parent, isn't there? When you suspect, and I think it's especially so when they're really young, you suspect that they're about to do the wrong thing. And you're just watching them. And you know that they're going to do the wrong thing. Whatever it is, you know, it might be, you know, you've told them, I don't know, not to slam a door or something like that. And they're about to close the door and you know they're about to slam it. And so you, rather than warn them, you wait. And then they slam the door and you're, rah! You're all over them. And you let rip. Now, my kids have a very well-developed fairness radar. Does anyone have kids like that? And they know if I'm treating them fairly or if I'm not. But they also know that if I've explained to them very clearly what we expect as behaviors, and if I describe to them the consequences that will be put in place if they don't live up to those behaviors, then they may well be upset and disappointed when there are consequences, but they're less likely to get angry because it's fair and there's justice. Parenting is a challenge. Sometimes being a parent is more about an art than it is a science. We can read all the parenting books we like, and that's actually not a bad thing to do if you're a parent, but every parenting situation is unique. Every child is unique. We need to be really aware of what's happening in the lives of the child. There's actually a really important discernment piece here when it comes to parenting. Knowing how to respond. Knowing when to respond. Knowing if we need to respond differently to different situations. Honestly, maybe it's just me, but there are times when parenting is beyond my own capacity. It's too much of a challenge. It's too complicated, especially when you've got three or more kids. Then they gang up on you, and that's a whole other story. But 1 Corinthians chapter 1:25 says this. It says, for the foolishness of God is wiser than human wisdom, and the weakness of God is stronger than human strength. And when it comes to those that we are responsible for, we really need God's wisdom. And we really need to keep coming back to Jesus and saying, I can't do this on my own. I need your discernment. I need your insight. I need your understanding to to help me to know how my child is ticking, to help me to know what's happening for them and how best to respond to them as a parent in their situation. The last thing that we can tease out today is that we want to treat others as we want to be treated, to treat others as you'd want to be treated. Perhaps the most incredible aspect of this passage in the context that it's written is in verse 9, where Paul says to the masters, in the same way, treat your slaves. I've got that wrong a little bit. Treat your slaves in the way you want to be treated is effectively what he said. Treat them with respect. Treat them with dignity. Treat them with justice. Treat them with fairness. That's the posture we're to have to all people. I was fortunate in my time in construction to have a boss who did exactly this. Our wages and conditions were always fair. If there was a genuine need, whenever there was, say, a major sickness in an employee's family, just go, don't even take sick leave, we'll look after it. In hard times, my boss did all that he could not to lay off staff. There was a wages bill at the time, something like $30,000 a week that he was committed to. And there were times at great personal cost to himself where all work had dried up and anyone else would be laying off staff, he hung on to them. But it was also the reason, I think, for the long-term success of the business. Because in the segment of the industry that we were in, and it was a little niche spot, and so all the other companies that were in that industry all knew each other, and we were the company that had the lowest staff turnover. We were the company that had the maximum staff buy-in, and we were dealing with some complex issues around construction, which I don't need to go in, but in order for it to work well, you needed staff buy-in, and my boss had it. And as a result, overwhelmingly, for most of the time, the business was successful and it grew in spite of those times that get in any construction industry where it goes quiet from time to time. When we're honest and when we treat those who are responsible for fairly, I think we walk in a blessing. And more often than not, things go well for us. I'd like to invite the worship team to come forward. And as they do, I want to finish by saying this. In a passage such as this, it's a very practical passage, and Paul's making a whole lot of really practical suggestions. And it's really tempting. Thanks, Nelson. Really, really looking forward to this solo, mate. This is going to be awesome. Who's looking forward to a solo from Nelson? Yeah? Now, there's this Celine Dion cover that I want. No, it's just kidding. Just kidding. I'll stretch, mate, okay? So you can wait, you can stretch. So it's really tempting when we look at a passage such as this to just stay in that practical advice space, because that's what Paul's giving us, a lot of practical suggestions, and it's tempting to stay in that space. And that would be an okay reading of the passage. But I don't actually think it's what Paul is doing here, because if we take this passage just in isolation from the rest of the Ephesians, the book of the Ephesians, this is all we read. But when we put it into the context of the rest of the book of Ephesians, what we find is that Paul has a very high Christology. That means he keeps bringing it back to Jesus. Right back at the start of Ephesians, in chapter 1, verse 20 to 21, it says these words, which will be up on the screen. He says that God worked in Christ when he raised him from the dead and seated him at his right hand in the heavenly places, far above all rule and authority and power and dominion and above every name that is named, not only in this age that is to come. If we want to be the best parent we can be, if we want to be the best boss or the best employer or the best employee or the best child or whatever it is, what Paul is saying throughout the book of Ephesians is to come back to him, come back to Jesus. You see, it's in knowing Jesus, it's in encountering him, it's in letting him do his work in us that it becomes much easier to do the things that Paul speaks about in this passage. I want to ask you to stand with me. We're going to sing Build My Life. I hope we are.
No Celine Dion.
We're going to sing Build My Life. It's a song that speaks of the work that Jesus does in us. And so as we sing this song, do so as a response to Him, where we make a point of prioritize getting to know Jesus and experiencing Him and allowing these things, which we've spoken about today, to follow in our lives. Let's sing Build My Life.